Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The Harlem Renaissance produced great literature, music, and art. It also produced a great basketball team. This is Soundcheck. I'm the bassist and composer Christian McBride, sitting in for John Schaefer. Today, an NBA legend and a composer tell us the story of the Harlem Wrens. And later, a live performance from Oteil Burbridge, bassist for the Allman Brothers Band. But first, most of us can name some of the key players in the cultural movement known as the Harlem Renaissance. Writers like Zora Neale Hurston and Langston Hughes, or musicians like Duke Ellington and the man you're hearing in the background right now, Count Basie. But you might not be able to name the key players on a basketball team that was part of that very same movement. They were called the Harlem Wrens, and they're the subject of a new documentary called On the Shoulders of Giants. Joining me now is the film's executive producer, the NBA Hall of Famer Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Bill Cunliffe, the pianist who composed the music for the film. Welcome, Kareem and Bill. How's it going?
Everything's good.
Hi, Christian.
Great to have you on the show. Thanks so much. Kareem, why did you want to tell the story? You call them the greatest basketball team you've never heard of. Tell us why they were so great.
Well, they were the best team playing professional basketball in the 1920s and 30s. But because it predates the NBA, nobody knows anything about them.
Right.
People know very little about what professional basketball was like before the NBA. So that's why they've been forgotten. And also the whole practice at that time of segregating professional sports kept them from really being as well-known as they should have been.
Yeah. This team was formed by Bob Douglas in 1922 and played until 1948. Can you paint a picture for us of what basketball was like at that time?
Well, the rules were a lot different than they were now. There was a center jump after every basket, and you could dribble with two hands.
Really?
It was a very physical game. You know, the players mauled each other, more or less. It was kind of like football and basketball combined.
Right, right.
It was a different type of game.
And obviously it was very segregated. I mean, later on we want to talk about the competition that they had, but I'm assuming that they played all black teams, correct?
No, they played
any
professional team that would play them. And the whole thing was that if they played a team that was in a league, this didn't count against that team's league record, and the Wrens were not allowed into any of those leagues because the leagues were all white.
Right, right. Now, where did the name of the team come from?
The team's name came from the place where they played. They played at the Renaissance Casino and Ballroom in Harlem on 137th
right.
Street and 7th Avenue.
Right.
And because they played there, they were the Wrens team. And that was their moniker for the whole time they existed.
We're talking with NBA legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and composer Bill Cunliffe about the documentary On the Shoulders of Giants. Bill, I'm going to shoot it to you now. How much overlap do you think there was between music and sports back then versus today? You know, are there a lot of athletes that really kind of come into contact with musicians as much as they did at that time?
Well, I think that was an unusual situation because, as you see in the movie, they would have basketball games in the theater, and then at night they would have dances with live bands. So I think that the kind of collision of music and sports was a lot more back then, although Bernie Williams is a very fine guitar player, and
right.
I think he's got a gig at the Catano, where I play sometimes in New York City. And I know that Grant Hill is a jazz fan.
Uh-huh.
I know that a lot of Orlando Cepeda loved Latin music, and I was
yes.
a Red Sox fan, so I was a big fan of cha-cha. So, I mean, you hear about it. There's somewhat of a synchronicity there because it's you're using your body in a rhythmic way to make sounds, and you're using your intellect in a certain way. So I think there's a lot of overlap.
Right. Talk a little bit about the music that was going on at that time. I know we're both historians, but I'd like to hear your take on the music that was going on at that time.
Well, this was really a fun project for me because my parents are old enough, so I grew up with big band swing, but the big band swing that I grew up with was what you would call a four-beat swing. And as you know, Christian, it's largely the bass that determines this. In the music of the swing era of the 40s and the early 50s, the bass is playing in four. Ding, 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 as you'll think about with a Ray Brown or a Paul Chambers. But when Kareem approached me to write the music for this movie, he really wanted to capture the spirit of the era of the 30s right. in New York. And the band is kind of playing in, as we learned in jazz school, more of a two feel. And it's largely the bass is playing in two until the late 30s when the All-American Rhythm Section with Walter Page and Joe Jones came into being with Count Basie. A lot of this music is somewhat in two because it's a dance music. Mm-hmm. And we only have 2 feet. So not only is the music in two, the beat is a little smaller in a certain way. In other words, in Count Basie and Duke Ellington, it's bop, boo, da in the 50s, but in the 30s, it's a little bit boop, boop, doo, doo, doo. It's a little tighter. Mm-hmm. It's a little more precise. And the clarinet work, there's a lot of clarinet in this music, and the clarinet is more of a precise instrument than the saxophone, because if you screw up something on the clarinet, you really hear it. So
yeah, you got that right.
And it's and it's a very athletic music. It's very, a lot of it's fast, and a lot of it has to do with the jitterbugging and the dances, the right. dance styles of the day.
Why don't we listen to Sugarfoot Stomp by one of the great band leaders of that era, the great Fletcher Henderson. Fletcher Henderson with Sugarfoot Stomp. I know the Fletcher Henderson Band was one of the staple ensembles that worked the Renaissance Ballroom. But, Bill, I'd like to hear you say a few words about Fletcher Henderson and that wonderful band he had.
Well, Fletcher Henderson was important far beyond his band. He was not a band leader that kept a band on the road for long periods of time, unlike people like Jimmy Lunsford
right.
and a fellow I worked with a few times, Cab Calloway. Those guys had bands on the road for extended periods of time, but Henderson was a very fine pianist, and more important, I think, as an arranger. He ended up writing a lot of the music for the more successful swing bands of the early 40s. For example, Benny Goodman used him to write a lot of his arrangements. So
right.
Fletcher Henderson's, you know, impact was more, I think, as an arranger than as a band leader. That being said, his band was very, very important in establishing the sense of written out parts for the musicians rather than musicians improvising their parts like they largely did with Louis Armstrong a few years
right.
earlier.
Right. And I know Fletcher had a brother named Horace, and I always thought that that was just two really cool names for brothers, Horace and Fletcher. just rings well, you know.
Right.
Kareem, you grew up in Harlem and Inwood. When did you first hear about the Wrens?
I first heard about the Wrens, you know, when I started playing basketball, like in the sixth and seventh grade, but I had no context to, like, relate to them.
Right.
My dad was from Brooklyn, and he wasn't a basketball fan, so he would try to get to the Renaissance Ballroom when the basketball game ended so he could dance. My dad was a Lindy Hopper.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, you know, the whole people from all over the New York area, you know, the New York metropolitan area, came to Harlem because that was where you went to have a good time and learn the latest dances and hear the latest great music.
Do you think many of today's fans, and particularly players as well, do they have an appreciation of the history of particularly the professional basketball during that time, about the way things were during the era of segregation?
They have no idea for the most part. They have no idea what it was about. They know vaguely that it wasn't a fun time to be a black American.
Right.
And then beyond that, they're very uninformed on specifics, which is really a shame, because we're losing a whole lot of vital history that needs to go from one generation to another. I was just thinking while you were talking to Bill about some of the stories around the Renaissance, such as how, Adam Clayton Powell Jr., his dad was the pastor at the Abyssinian Baptist Church right down the street from the Rennie. And Adam Clayton Powell Jr. would let Fats Waller and Count Basie into the church at night so that they could practice on the organ. And his dad didn't know it, you know. It's a whole different thing going on at night there in the Abyssinian Baptist Church, you know.
Right, right. Kareem, Harlem supported two golden eras, one in basketball, one in arts and culture. What does that say about Harlem to you, called the unofficial black capital of the U.S. in the film? How did it get that way?
I think it got that way because people with world-class talent would end up in Harlem. Black Americans, I'm referring to, would end up in Harlem if they had world-class talent, because New York was the media capital of the country. So Louis Armstrong was playing in somebody's band at Connie's, and he got a chance to do a few solos in the middle of a performance, and somebody from one of the major papers was there and heard him and said, "Wow, who was that guy?" And that's how Louis took over and became very, very well-known. Duke Ellington brought his band up from Washington, D.C. Nobody knew about them.
Right.
They played at the Cotton Club. All of a sudden, people were, like, packing the place to get in there to hear them. And it took off. It went literally around the world, especially, to Europe. Jazz all of a sudden became a very, very hot thing. To this day, the 1920s is still known as the jazz era.
Right, right. Kareem, we'd like to play a clip from your documentary, On the Shoulders of Giants. This is the philosopher and author Cornel West talking about the connection between music and sports.
The Harlem Renaissance was one of intellectual breakthrough, of artistic breakthrough, but also one in which sports was central.
Yes.
Because, see, the history of black people was such that for 244 years, all we had was our voices and our bodies. We had no land, no territory, we had no rights, we had no liberty, so all of our freedom, all of our self-determination was in our voices. It's one reason why the anthem of black people is "Lift Every Voice." And we had our bodies, so we could use our bodies to stylize space and time, the way we walk, the way we talk.
We're talking with NBA legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and composer Bill Cunliffe about the documentary On the Shoulders of Giants. Gentlemen, I'd like to hear you both say a few words about the connection between music and sports. Bill, why don't you go first?
Well, you know, when Kareem came to me and asked me to do this, I've always been a big basketball fan. I'm 5'6", so I never played it very well. But I used to go see the Celtics all the time, and I saw Kareem and Bill Russell all the great players in the 60s and 70s. And when he talked to me about the big band sound, I immediately heard basketball and the tom-toms of the drummer. And I've always loved the rhythm of basketball, the sound, because it's kind of together but not really together. It's individuals, and yet they're unified. And I've always thought of jazz that way. I think a great jazz team or a jazz group is like a sports team where everyone's listening to each other and coordinating with each other, but they're also being themselves. And so I think it's learning to be a good musician and learning to be a good athlete in a sports team are very, very similar endeavors to me.
Yes. Kareem, would you like to follow up on that?
Well, for me, music was a very important thing in my home. My dad was a trombone player. He played with Kenny Durham and a lot of the guys from Brooklyn, right after the war, the beboppers. That was my dad's thing. So the music was always on the turntable in my house.
Yeah.
And I always saw myself, even though I was playing sports, I always visualized myself as a jazz musician. You know, I wanted to be Miles Davis or Sonny Rollins, you know, when they get a chance to take the solo. I always felt that that's what I was doing, and I tried to hold it down that way with that kind of style.
Yes.
The music just affected my life that way. It always has.
The wonderful trumpeter and band leader Wynton Marsalis compares roles in the band to roles on the court. He calls the drummer the power forward, the bass is the center. What do you have to say about that, Kareem?
I agree with so much of what Wynton had to say. He knows a lot about the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, right over there at the Jazz at Lincoln Center in their rehearsal hall, they have a basketball hoop.
Yeah, so that's right.
So they can shoot.
That's right.
And, you know, play hoops.
They should be careful with that.
Time.
They should be careful with that. I remember Hurl and Riley blew out a knee and couldn't play for about 2 months. Played with his left leg stuck out from the hi-hat cymbal. Bill, the Wrens were a traveling team. In your words, how difficult was it for black athletes and artists who traveled around the country?
Well, we've all known the horrible, you know, situations that people like Louis Armstrong went through.
Right.
He would play a beautiful hall, a symphony hall in a town, and he couldn't stay in the hotel or eat in a restaurant. And, of course, the Harlem Wrens basketball team, they had the same problem. It
yeah.
was a really horrible thing. And, you know, we, as musicians, we have to take what happens to us and put it through our instruments. And I know you know the famous story in 1963 where Miles Davis told all the musicians in his band that he was going to donate all of their money to the NAACP.
Right.
And so Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter and Ron Carter and Tony Williams ended up giving the performance of their lives. So we, as musicians, have to take the bad things that happen to us and put them into the music. And sometimes the best music you make is when you're really, really ticked off at somebody.
That's right. That's right. I know a producer, I won't call his name, but he always had this theory that musicians always played better when they were angry, so he would purposely try to make the musicians upset before they went into the studio.
That's good if they stay on the gig.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Kareem, the Wrens won the championship in 1939, correct?
Yes, they did.
I want to play another clip from the documentary. In this clip, we hear the late John Isaacs, who played for the Harlem Wrens. The team won in 1939 and received jackets from team owner Bob Douglas. The jackets read World's Colored Champions. And here John Isaacs described what he did next.
I went in the office. I said, "Hey, Mr. Douglas, may I borrow a razor blade?" And every thread that said colored, I cut it, took the colored off, and threw it on the floor. As it says, world champion. I said, because this is who we are. And it can't be any world colored champion, is blah, blah, blah. I said, no, no, no. We cut it off. And everybody looked at me and said, even Douglas came out. He said, "You ruined the jacket." I said, "No, I made it real."
Yeah. Kareem, can you talk a little bit about that 1939 championship team?
Well, it was just a great team with all-star players at every position. Wee Willie Smith, John Isaacs, Zach Clayton, Tarzan Cooper from Philadelphia was the center. And who was the fifth guy? Oh, man. I'm drawing a blank on the fifth guy. Bill Yancey, I think it was.
Now, Clayton, is that the same Zach Clayton as the boxing referee?
Yeah, he ended up, yeah.
Ah, dig
after
that.
His career.
Dig
yes.
that.
Yes, he ended up being a boxing referee.
Wow.
But they played, some promoters in Chicago decided to have a tournament that would have all the best professional basketball teams participate regardless of color.
Right.
So if you had a good team, you got to go. So the Wrens and the Globetrotters were invited to this team, and the Wrens and the Globetrotters were in the same bracket. It was more or less a thing where they figured that they had to find the best black team and make them play whoever won in the rest of the tournament. So it ended up the Wrens beat the Globetrotters in the semifinals and then played the Oshkosh All-Stars, who were the reigning champs of the all-white league. They played the Wrens in the finals, and the Wrens beat them pretty easily in the finals.
We're talking with NBA legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and composer Bill Cunliffe about the documentary On the Shoulders of Giants. Kareem, how many of the Wrens are still with us?
None of them.
None of them?
No, none of them. None of them are still alive. John Isaacs, he passed away just 3 years ago in 2009, and he was the last one who played on the championship team. He was the last one that was alive. And then he lived a little for, I think he just died last year, but he played on the team.
How did this team break up?
The team broke up when the NBA started, and the owner of the Wrens, Bob Douglas, applied to the NBA to have his team join the NBA because they still were one of the best teams in the country. And the NBA turned them down. And he decided that he could not, as they say, he could not fight City Hall and, you know, break through and get his team to play in a league that they belonged in. So he decided he was going to disband the team. Joe Lapchick, who was coaching the Knicks, heard about this, and he was going to quit. He was just going to quit coaching because he just didn't want to be involved in a league that was biased like that. Mm. And Bob Douglas told Joe to stay, keep his position because he had some power and maybe he might get a chance to do something. And of course, 2 years later, the NBA decided that it would integrate, and Joe Lapchick took Sweetwater Clifton to play for the Knicks. And Sweetwater was one of the three first black Americans to integrate the NBA.
Well, we're sadly getting toward the end of the segment here, but I have to ask you this, Kareem, because we talked about this before, but we know about some of the great starting five lineups in basketball history. I like to ask you to put together your starting five all-star jazz quintet.
That, you know, that's impossible. Why would you shoulder that on me?
Because you did such a wonderful band before. I know you can do it again.
This is just off the top of my head.
Okay.
I can't remember what I told you the first time. Tony Williams on drums, Bud Powell on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, Sonny Rollins on tenor sax, and Dizzy Gillespie on trumpet.
See? That's awesome. That's an awesome band.
It would definitely be awesome. Don't know if they could play together.
Yeah, but, right. Bill, out of all the NBA players you can think of, who do you think would be the most incredible jazz musician?
Wow, I wish...
Other than the man sitting next to you.
Well, I was going to say, you know, he had it in his family. So, jazz musician. Well, you blindsided me by this one, but I think that Bill Russell would have been a really good bass player. Because I think he would have been the Ray Brown. I think he would have kept everyone in line and told everybody what to do, and I think it would have swung like a freight train.
I agree. Well, gentlemen, sadly, that's all we have time for. The film is called On the Shoulders of Giants, and it's out now on DVD and available to watch instantly on Netflix. To my guest, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and the pianist, Bill Cunliffe, thank you so much for sharing some of this with us.
Thanks, Christian.
My pleasure, Christian. Nice to talk to you.
You too, gentlemen. Coming up next, a live performance from Oteil Burbridge, bassist extraordinaire and member of the Allman Brothers Band. This is Soundcheck. You stomp, stomp, it's opening, you tell, people just
just gather around, round on the shoulders of giants, and we got an alliance. Herbie Hancock playing now.